Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast with Sharon Lecter. And I'm so excited because today I get to interview a friend that we lost contact with each other for a while, but this man is truly a living legend, Dennis Waitley, and has been a mentor of mine and mentor to millions. You've impacted tens of millions of people around the world. So Dennis, thank you for being with me today.
Well, Sharon, it's great to be with you again. You know, I feel a little bit like, you know, they put me on all over the world as a living legend. And the problem is they're showing videos of the other legends because they're no longer living. So I'm getting tired of doing eulogies at all of my contemporaries. You know, I did the Jim Rohn eulogy, Robert Schuller, Wayne Dyer, Zig Ziglar, Stephen Covey. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, I'm not ready.
There's more for you to do and there's more lives for you to impact. That's for sure. And I love your career has just been so incredible. And from, you know, from motivational side to, you know, you've written what, 24 books, I think. I mean, incredible, 18 nonfiction books and New York Times bestseller. So we've had similar pathways, but you continue to just, you're tireless and constantly working to support people and help people. And I love some of your new work, and I really would like to concentrate on that, on your rewiring your brain for success. We hear a lot about that, but you've actually made this kind of a main focus of the work that you're doing. And but tell me a little bit more about how you got here, Dennis, because you've truly been such an incredible motivator for so many people. Share a little bit about the Dennis behind the scenes.
Well, you know, Sharon, it's very typical. It's like not rags to riches, but every speaker says, you know, I came from a poor family and we were dysfunctional and my father was an alcoholic and my mother was negative. That's all true, but I don't use that story. But my grandmother was my great inspiration during World War II, and we planted a victory garden, and she called them the seeds of greatness. She said, whatever you put in the soil and nurture, it will come up. But she said, weeds come in unannounced, uninvited, and they don't need watering. And I said, you mean weeds? We have to weed our garden? She said, oh yes, every week. And be careful not to step on the flowers and vegetables because the weeds will always be there. And I said, what do you mean by the seeds of greatness? She said, model yourself after people who are authentic servants doing good for others, but don't try to be a rich superstar by over-promising and under-delivering. That's kind of what she said. I didn't know what she meant at the time, but she just said authentic people. So then the Korean War came, and I thought we'd always be at war. It seemed like we were always at war growing up, and then so I went to Annapolis instead of Stanford or somewhere. I wanted to be a writer, but instead I became a pilot. I became a carrier-based attack pilot doing something I didn't want to do, but thinking I'd always be doing it. And the long and short of it, I learned how to fly. I learned how to set goals, get a target, get home on the carrier. I learned that it takes almost a cybernetic kind of mind. And then I did rehabilitation for returning prisoners of war from Vietnam later. And I found that when you're doing within while you're doing without, and you're in a cage or in an 8x8, you have nothing to do but think. And you have two choices. Think of your misery and where you are, or where you want to go and where you want to get back to, or where you want to go if you've never been there. And I put that aside, and finally I decided to give up military and develop people instead of destroy them. So instead of defending my country, I wanted to develop. And it was just an evening, weekend kind of thing. And the next thing I knew, I kept doing it and doing it like you have. And Earl Nightingale heard a little tape of mine, and he said, "You got a nice voice. You got good stuff. You're not a radio guy. You're not full of excitement, but you have good stuff. If you're ever in Chicago," and that was when there was no audio album except Lead the Field. And then Success Motivation Institute came along, SMI. And so I got thrust into the business with an audio album called The Psychology of Winning at a time when America was losing. We weren't having much success. We didn't go to the 1980 Olympics and things, except for the 1980 Winter Olympics. And I was appointed chairman of psychology for the Olympics. My first order of business was the Miracle on Ice in Lake Placid, New York in 1980. And I watched Herb Brooks and the American team beat the Russians. And I decided to devote myself to POW, but not prisoner of war, psychology of winning instead. And so I plunged into this study. I am not an expert. I am not a bona fide scientist, but I'm a bona fide lifelong student of the psychology of a winning human being. And finally, Sharon, to make that long soliloquy, you give me a question and I'll give you a seminar. So I like short answers.
You're not alone.
I know. Once I get a microphone, it's like a snow cone. I just keep enjoying it. But that's kind of how it happened. I kind of lucked into it in a way that I was used as a direct mail loss leader to build a mailing list for Nightingale Conant. And it just happened to hit because I was unknown and didn't demand a high royalty. They sold $100 million worth of one album over a long period of time. So that built a career for me, and the phone rang. And I went out like Johnny Appleseed.
I love it. I absolutely love it because it is, I read it. If you haven't read Psychology of Winning, you need to. Listen to the tapes. It's absolutely amazing. And so, but today you're talking about rewiring your brain for success. Talk a little bit about that, because I think there's a lot of people out there that need to be rewired in what we're dealing with in today's environment.
Oh, there sure are. I may be a half-wit, I may be on a different wavelength than most people, but I'm a pretty pragmatic, going to the Naval Academy and all of that. I like to have proven stuff. I mean, you're a certified public accountant, you've been giving financial advice that works, that has been proven to work, so you're not selling pie in the sky, or you're not trying to give people this app. The success app. Everyone asks me, "Do you have an app for success?" And I said, if I did, it would be like a pet rock. But I know about rewiring your brain because early on, I went to Bulgaria and Dr. Georgi Lazanov was doing super learning, and he was helping children learn things when they were 6 years old, and they were using suggestopedic music. But during the Olympic days, I found that the Olympic coaches in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s were teaching athletes to run the race in their mind. And when they ran the race in their mind, they were hooked up to instruments that showed that their muscles were firing in the same way that they might be on the track or in the pool or going over the high jump bar. In other words, the brain was pre-playing and replaying the software program. And so positive thinking and optimism became the biology of hope, the placebo effect, people being optimistic and having the pharmacy of the brain, the endorphins when you're high, the dopamine when you want to be happy, the adrenaline when you want to shove hard or push back or run. So I began to study all of that, and finally, the breakthroughs in the past 10 years have begun to prove that positive thinking is not just pablum, that there are now more scientific evidence showing that there are neural pathways that are physical, like highways, surface streets, cul-de-sacs, and roads under construction. And the thoughts that we have, millions and millions of them, and hundreds of thousands every day, are called traffic. So if you look at the electrochemical traffic flowing down the highways, creating the traffic in our minds, they have now proven that you can rewire by putting new thoughts on top of the old. You can't erase any old thoughts, so you can't stop doing something. You don't break a habit, you replace it with a new one with more information. But the long and short of it is, if you do certain things in certain ways over a period of time, you are able to put a new neural pathway that has new information to override the old program. And for me, I'm a habit guy. I believe that winning and losing are habit forming. And I believe that you've been like you are for a long time, so don't go to a Dennis Waitley retreat or a Tony Robbins firewalk or a Zig Ziglar, you know, any of those programs, expect to come away with a whole new you. Because for me, habits take 6 months, a year.
I tell people 2 years for me, yeah.
No, you give somebody 2 years of doing certain things a certain way every day. And it, so there's no such thing as a 21-day new habit. But what's happening, Sharon, and you know this better than I, is that in a short time span, a short memory span, and millennial mindset with a cell phone, with a smartphone in front of you, and you want the answer now.
Yep.
You're not willing to go through what you may need to go through to get yourself up the stairway because you want to take an escalator or elevator to the top in one day. And I have found that it takes at least 6 months to begin to develop a new habit without the old one overriding and getting you back to the buffet table or being late or being angry and so on. And then a year to a year and a half. But what's happening is that brain science, neuroscience is just wide open. I'm studying it every day. And for people with stroke, people with brain damage, people with phobias, claustrophobia, hydrophobia, fear of heights, fear of needles, you know, people who are afraid of things can overcome that with neuroscientific training, where they can override this fear and put a new program in, but they need to work on it for quite a while. Now, there's a lot of gurus out there trying to say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 change, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 brain change. And it's not possible. I wish it were. If it were, I'd be the first to admit that there's a button you can push, a pill you can take, or a program you can go to. But I'm really excited about this idea, especially for me. I'm an octogenarian. So naturally, I want to live as long as I can and love as much and give as much and learn much. And so I'm trying to live as long as I can by learning what I need to do to overcome the predisposition and my old bad habits. So I'm trying to gain some new habits at my age and even get a better memory. And that's really important.
Oh. Absolutely. I mean, but I really want to focus on something that you talked about, because it truly is something that we deal with all the time. And I think it's not a generational thing. It's just honestly, today's generation, those millennials, and even the next generation after the millennials, do want instant results, and they want, you know, their information in sound bites as opposed to, you know,
yep,
lengthy stories. So how do you successfully get them to open up to the world of possibility that if they invest that 6 months, if they invest themselves into going to a deeper level instead of sound bites, that they truly can get results?
You know, it's not easy. I've had to call it real wealth or true wealth. And I've had to almost No, I never promote and I don't send out stuff, but when they say, will this help me get rich? I say, in the richest sense of having quality, and I said, standard of living is how much money you've got to spend, and quality of life is who you spend it with, what you do, and with whom and how. And I said, I can help you with the quality of life, but I can't give you quantity of life, nor can I give you quantity of money. But what I've been able to try to do is I'm doing some podcasts and some webinars, mostly in Asian countries with people who don't have much money, because I'm helping the younger people start, and they're making the same mistake. They're using Hollywood and celebrities and Lamborghini and Escada and Chanel.
Drives me nuts.
Drives me absolutely crazy. So what I do is I introduce them to the overflowing buckets of money principle. And they say, oh, what's that? Is that, I said, yes, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs in reverse. And they said, oh, we like that, because, and I said, and it's going downhill instead of uphill. They said, great. So we can go downhill in order to get it. We don't have to climb the steps. And I said, yeah, look. So sitting on the top, there's this bucket, and it's called the income you have. And then a little bit of it may drip over later, and that's called discretionary income. And once you put a roof over your head and food in your mouth, you may be able to drip some in the second bucket, which is called stability, maybe to ensure that you'll live a little longer, or have, if you get sick, and then a little drips over and you have a little bit of quality, a little drips over and you can have savings, maybe 10%, maybe pay your future first, you know, like 10%. And they said, yes, but if we buy a Ferrari, then everyone will think we're rich, and then they'll listen to what we have to say. Many of them are in direct sales. I said, no. You need to have a home, and your parents are living with you now, so you need a home for you and your parents, because you take care of your parents. So you can't live in a Lamborghini. It's too small. You can't raise your children there. So what I'm able to do with them is catch them. They like a podcast. They'll watch for a half an hour. And then I hit them with some things that are reality checks. And I say, look, I may be old, but I've been there and done that, and I've made every mistake you can make. And just listen to me for a minute. You can't get there that quick. So why don't you do it a little at a time, and I can show you a stair-step way to be more successful. I said, that way, when you fail, it's not as hard. When you succeed, you get reinforcement of that.
I share them the concept of, I share the concept of little wins. You know, one, you know, take a step in the right direction, and it builds confidence and it helps you take a bigger step next time. So
I love that, because in the Olympics, if you're going over the high jump bar at 7'6¾", it's very difficult to go over at 6'7" or 7'7". The 1/4 inch, which is better than you've ever done, is a foot to an Olympian. So we have to raise the bar incrementally. But once they go over it, it's like the 4-minute mile. Then they've proven that little step. And next thing they shoot for is 7-8. So at the Olympic Games, if they're still held in Tokyo, if we get a handle on all the things that are happening, someone will try to high jump 7'8", and they will set a new world's record. And that means by the inch, it's a cinch, but by the yard, it's very hard.
Oh, I love that. So I want you to repeat what you shared a minute ago about your definition of true wealth, because again, I think we're singing the same song. So not necessarily the money you have in your account, but.
Well, you know, and you have a rude awakening. So I had a surgical error a year and a half ago, and the surgeon was trying to give me another 10 years. So I want to live to be, my mother lived to be 97, and she was negative. and ate everything wrong and said everything wrong, but she lived 97 years. And I held her in my arms and told her she was a good mother. And I want to live as long as she does, 97, but I'd like to live to be 100, which would be 2033 for me. And so what I really feel true wealth and true wealth really is the progressive realization of worthwhile goals that are pleasing and important to me, that benefit other people as well as myself, and make me glad that I was given an opportunity to live this beautiful, wonderful life and made a small difference, and that my grandchildren could say that I was a role model that they could emulate in some way. Now, I've been able to define financial security to some of them, and this is me quoting you. My definition of financial security is that amount of assets that are liquid in nature that will give me that amount of income, that will give me the after taxes, that will give me the quality of life that I surely want, believe I deserve, and have been striving for, the quality of life I want without having to work or have day-to-day income. So it will give me that. And it's really not easy. It's a simple formula, but it's not easy to attain. And, you know, the pharaohs made a big mistake. They thought they could take their material goods with them to the afterlife. And so they buried themselves with all their possessions. What I've learned at my age about that true wealth is that I can go where I want, with whom I want, not have to be a stowaway in my children's or grandchildren's home, not be put in a senior home, not be living with people that I don't want to live with, and I want to have dignity. Of all things, I want to have a dignified life, and I want to be happy, and I am happy, but I want to plant shade trees under which I myself will never sit. So I want to be a shade tree planter and believe that my life has been worth living, and immortality to me would be the goodness that I've managed to share with people that I meet along the way. And that would be that some goodness in me would live in them as a result of us having met. So, and the last thing, Sharon, is that I have been, I changed my estate completely. So I've been sitting on my ranch saying, I'm not going to give each of them a windfall at that moment in time when I'm gone. And I won't understand it. They won't appreciate it. They'll just say, Dad was great, or Granddad was great. So I've done a passion project with each of my children and grandchildren. And that passion is something that they're absolutely committed to do. And they bring me a passion plan. And I look it over and I inquire, and I'm helping them finance a current passion, not a car, not a house, not a college education, but a passion that they're engaged in, committed to, and will make a change in their life now rather than 15 years after I'm gone. And so anyway, that's the longer definition of, I should have just said my definition is planting shade trees.
I love that though. I love that, planting shade trees. My father was career Navy as well. And when I was growing up, he would just simply ask if you added value to someone's life today. And so that's, for me, it's always wanting to know that, you know, when I'm gone, people will feel like their life was better for it. And I know you've had a lot of time in China too. And I was in China once and had my translator sitting next to me, and a young kid stood up and to ask me a question, and everybody started booing him. And my translator said, you don't need to answer the question. I said, well, what was it? And the guy was asking me, you know, what do you think the meaning of life is? And the people in the room felt that was a rude question to be asking me. And I said, no, I'll answer it. And I go, I think the meaning of life is to know when you're gone, there are people here on earth that feel that their lives have been better, are better off because of knowing you.
And well, so, I love that. I love that. I believe it just like you do. I know, you know, you and I have gone in different directions in life, but we come to the same conclusion.
Yeah.
The funny thing about me is I'm better known in China. For the last 20 years, I've been in China a lot because they revere old people. So why wouldn't I go where I was in demand, which is China? They say, oh, you're so old and so wise. And Sharon, the funniest thing, I was quoting Confucius a lot. So I was traveling all over China, and I said, women make better leaders than men. Women, like water, flow and conquer rock. Rock, hard and brittle. Water conquers rock. And this high school student came up and he said, wow, you went to school with Confucius. And I said, he's 1800 years old. I'm only 800 years old. And the people say all the time to me, they said, you're a lot older than your voice. And I said, yes, I am. I'm a lot older than my voice because I went to voice fitness class, but I didn't go to body fitness class. So my body is aged, but my voice is still younger than I am. And he said, yeah, my gosh, we expected you to be a lot older or a lot younger. And I said, sorry.
I love that. Oh my gosh, I could talk to you all day. For the people that are watching and listening, Dennis, tell them how they can find more, because you have so many wonderful programs. Where's the best place for them to look?
They can just take my name, which is spelled only with one N, but they can go Dennis Waitley, and that's waitley.com. And if they want to, they could put a / on it and put gift, and I'll give them a free gift, like The Richest Man in Babylon by George Place, and I'll give them an audio if they want to stop by. But I don't try to sell them anything. If they want to stop by, I'm happy to give them a download or something.
Well, Dennis, you are just such an incredible gift to all who know you, and I appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. And you're going to hang out with me for a few more minutes, because we're going to do another recording for the private Facebook group called Play Big Movement with Sharon Lecter. So all of you rewind and listen to this incredible brilliance. I'm just so honored that you were with me today, Dennis. And then if you haven't joined the private Facebook group, please do, because we're going to continue talking. And we're going to be talking about habits in that group. So that's something where we have the expert on habits. And I love the fact that you don't change a habit. I mean, you don't get rid of a habit. You just change it and adjust it. I love the way that you talk about that, Dennis.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real honor to be part of your show, and it's good to reconnect after all this time. I hope we do it again.
Absolutely. It won't take that long next time. We've been remiss, and we won't let that happen, because one of the things I teach, Dennis, is the power of association. And certainly I'm a better person for the fact that I know you, and I want to make sure we keep in touch. So
thank you so much.
And for all of you, thank you for watching and listening to this segment. Please do rewind it and listen to it. Brilliance. I'm just so honored Dennis was with me, and I look forward to the next time. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much, and have a fabulous day.